Welcome to Whiskey Cast, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode 11, the first of 2006. I hope you had a happy holiday season, and thanks again for your emails and compliments over the past couple of weeks. In just a minute, we'll talk with one of the mavericks of the whiskey industry, but first, let's catch up on the news, as another U.S. state comes out of the dark ages. Sunday, South Carolina's law requiring all mixed drinks to be served from miniature bottles went by the wayside. The state's bartenders are now allowed to legally pour drinks from full-size bottles. The mini-bottle law had been in place since 1973, when the state finally allowed bars to sell liquor by the drink. President George W. Bush kept the Christmas tradition of granting pardons to those convicted of minor federal crimes. This year's list included three convicted moonshiners from South Carolina and Tennessee. Their records date back to 1950. And just in case you missed our last episode, the Glen Grant saga is finally over. Pernod Ricard put the distillery on the market to meet European Union antitrust concerns after the Allied Domecq takeover. Just a couple of days before Christmas, Pernod Ricard announced a deal to sell Glen Grant to Campari as part of a deal worth 130 million euros. It's Campari's first foray into the whiskey business. The events calendar for the next few weeks is filling up. Jim Murray will be in Vancouver for the Architectural Institute of British Columbia's whiskey fundraiser on January 24th. That's the eve of Burns Night, of course, and comes just a couple of days after the Victoria Whiskey Festival. There are several events coming up in Europe as well. The Munich Whiskey Festival and the Lindoras Whiskey Society's Whiskey Fest 2006 are both on the first weekend in February. The following weekend is the Whiskey Festival Noord-Nederland in Groningen, and the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Brussels is the week of February 24th. Also on the calendar, Malt Advocate editor John Hansel holds his first single malt tasting of the year at Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia on February 7th, and Whiskey Magazine's Whiskey Live event in Tokyo will be on February 12th. By the way, tickets are now on sale for Whiskey Live events in London the first weekend of March, and in New York on April 5th. A few weeks ago, I hinted that there might be a surprise for Highland Park lovers that night in New York. Now we get the rest of the story from Whiskey Magazine editor Dominic Rosgrove.
Whiskey Magazine will have its very own Whiskey Live Highland Park 23-year-old on sale at Whiskey Live New York in April. Very, very excited about this. We do this in Japan. We take a selected cask and sell it through initially just through the show. So New York can look forward to tasting for the very first time a whiskey nobody else has tasted.
Finally, tickets are still on sale for the Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco the weekend of March 24th and Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest in Chicago on March 30th. Last time around, we talked with John Glazer of Compass Box about the marriage of whiskey and cheese and how it can be better than wine and cheese in some ways. Glazer has a track record for innovation in whiskeys, and sometimes his innovation causes a bit of controversy. Last fall, Compass Box released the first edition of The Spice Tree, a vatting of four Highland malts with a twist. Part of the vatting received extra time in casks with French oak staves mounted inside the casks.
To make a wine barrel, you make staves, and then you bend them into the shape of the barrel over heat, and then you toast the wood. What many coopers do now as well is they make staves that they don't bend into barrels. They just keep them flat. They toast them, and with flat staves that aren't being put into a barrel, you can toast them to a much wider spectrum of styles, to allow the winemaker, the whiskey maker, to sort of customize the effect of the oak on the liquid. And this is new in the last less than 10 years. The wine industry has been uses it widely, but the whiskey industry hasn't cottoned on to this yet. But I know we will, the industry will, that is, once people see the benefits of this. You can actually get better quality wood with these flat staves than you can with a barrel. The main reason for that is the ways you toast the two things. You can only toast a barrel for so long over the heat, because otherwise, at a certain point, you'll start to compromise the structural integrity of the barrel. But with these flat staves that are never actually made into a barrel, you don't have to worry about structural integrity. So you've got a lot more freedom with how the ways in which you can toast them and the degrees to which you can toast them.
Traditionalists cried foul, but the first release sold out in just 5 weeks.
We've done a secondary maturation on a proportion of the whiskey, on most of the whiskey, with new French oak of the very highest quality. What people have been interested in is the fact that we've done this by taking flat staves of oak rather and sticking them inside an oak cask, rather than aging the whiskey in an oak cask made of this new virgin oak. And this is a technique borrowed from the wine industry. And the key thing for people to understand is that today, given cooperage techniques, you can get higher quality cooperage oak in these flat staves that the wine industry uses than you can get in an actual barrel. So what we're doing is taking advantage of, you know, an evolution in, you know, a traditional process here, you know, the making of cooperage oak. And as I say, you know, this stave insert idea is something widely used in the wine industry for two or three decades. And, you know, some people said, well, wait a minute, is this traditional? And yes, absolutely, it's traditional because you've been using the wine industry for two, three decades. But it's an evolution of oak maturation.
The first batch of Spice Tree was sold only in Europe, but when the next release comes out this spring, Glazer plans to export it to North America as well. The Scotch Whiskey Association has raised some questions about the Spice Tree technique, but here's my take. Whiskey experts have said for years that the wood makes the whiskey. And if that's really the case, anything that gets more contact between the cask and the whiskey should be seen as a good thing. It worked for Lafroy with the quarter cask, which is one of my current favorites, and I'd almost be willing to bet that some of Glazer's critics are quietly testing his idea out on a few barrels of their own whiskey. That's all for this edition of Whiskey Cast. Next time around, we'll get away from the controversy and look at every whiskey lover's dream, the chance to visit the distilleries where our favorite drink comes from. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2006, and, as always, comes to you from the charming yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.